Hello, welcome to The Found Symbol. We are four actual Freemasons, and we're going to discuss all the symbols, signs, and Easter eggs in Episode 9, Order 8 of Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol. I'm John. I'm here with Jason, Joe, and RJ, and we're going to talk about this week's episode. It just dropped today, so this is fun. Fair warning, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you haven't seen this week's episode, get ready. It's going to be a wild ride. So what did you guys think of this week's episode?
It was okay.
Say more. What do you think, Jason? Better? Worse? On par?
It's about on par. Malak evades another trap because he's always three steps ahead. I still don't know where they're going with tatted up Chuck Dunning, or as everybody else likes to call him, Prison Yoda. So my theory is that Prison Yoda ends up being the big bad. He will end up dying in the next episode, but he will kill Malak first. Malak will sacrifice himself to save his family. That's what I'm thinking.
Even though,
a Darth Vader type of redemption.
Even though he killed his mom again.
There was good in you all along.
Man, Han Solo.
I mean, Ben Solo did the same thing. So.
Hey, lots of younglings died. That's all I have to say.
It's a true story. I thought the episode.
I saw Anakin killing Yinglings.
Yinglings, slamming them. I thought the episode was just okay. I mean, there was a lot of symbolism that we went through. We got to see a lot of cool stuff. The story arc was a little bit different. It felt a little anticlimactic until like the last 30 seconds of the episode, where it leaves you off at a major cliffhanger. Which, to be honest, if the cliffhanger wasn't there, maybe there wasn't enough in that episode to get me to watch the next episode.
It's going to be episode 10. It's going to end hopefully in the next episode. But wait.
There was zero Triskelions in this episode, so I'm giving it a 9 out of 10.
I mean,
and screw all of you. So,
and that's how we know it's the miniseries is closing.
You're just sad because you just got a new tattoo with a Triskelion on your arm.
Oh, that will be my next tattoo.
Okay. It's going to be right on the head.
Yep. Well, I got room there because yes. It's shiny. Mm-hmm.
All right, so this week's episode is Order 8, which we'll discuss a little bit later, but we start off at the very beginning with a nice little pyre, not unlike Darth Vader, where they burn the body, and that is, they being Malak, burns the body of his recently deceased mother by his own hand, but starts drawing some weird symbols all over her body, and we're trying to figure out what some of these are. So, RJ, what did you find?
Well, I mean, he obviously goes into a burial, right? Like, as you guys saw, he has the ceremonial, mm-hmm. you know, piece of cutting down the wood and chopping it and preparing it as like an homage to his mom.
But renting the fabric.
That's right. Yeah. Even though when he killed her, right? Like, he did it in is there a way to humanely do it? He did it in this very intimate way. And so he's like still connected somehow. Which, leading to what Jason was talking about, maybe there's some redemption story there. Yeah, I don't know. But it was interesting. The first thing I noticed, right, is the Mona Hieroglyphica that gets placed on her head, or what looks to be a Mona Hieroglyphica.
I found that to be weird, too, just to interrupt you there, because
sure,
the closest symbol I could find was here in the upper right, which is an alchemical symbol for brass.
Mm-hmm.
Why brass? Why on her forehead? Why, like, you know, third eye, you know, that chakra, pineal gland, anything like that? Like, it seems weird why that would be put there. I mean, again, it's got a little bit of decoration on the edges, but that's the closest thing I could find from a symbol that relates to that.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out the connection between the coins from the Munich Olympics. And he placed over her eyes.
So here's what I think. Here's what I think they did. Right, was when he puts those coins on. If you're unfamiliar, right, the coins in the eyes is a common thing, right, to cross the river Styx. You take the coins with you. You give them to the dude. He takes you across the river. The old man takes you across the river, right? So these particular two coins, if you zoom in, you see the word Olympia. You do a search for Olympia coin, and lo and behold, you find out it's a 1972 Olympiad coin, which was cast in 1972. And what's really interesting about it is that it's a 1972 coin that utilizes symbology from Germany that comes almost directly from Nazi occultism, using that decorative black sun, which is called the Black Sun.
Yikes.
So whether or not they were aware of using that particular iconography in the shot, I don't know, but I can tell you the iconography of the Black Sun, which is represented by these alternating light and dark lightning bolts, is what's there. And so maybe they were just looking for a cool coin, and it was probably cheaper to grab a couple of these 1972 Olympiad coins from Germany than it was to cast something new and have, you know, 350
some actual Greek coins.
A coin with Triskelions.
A coin with Trisk. You know they probably asked for that.
Yeah, they couldn't get the production in time, so they had to use what was laying
also,
around.
If you look, he's drawing some stuff. I really couldn't figure out what he was trying to draw on her arm in that first shot. It was kind of like an hourglass shape, but without knowing what he was truly trying to draw there, I wouldn't know.
Yeah, it looked almost runic, but there's really
The
runes are a little bit more vertical.
Then the moons under her eyes, right? So this is just reminiscent kind of the feminine earthly existence. So and then he's got tears, right? So maybe this just is representative of like the end of her female existence and then the shedding of the tears. But it also kind of looks like the horned goddess, a pagan symbol, but it's more of a masculine symbol. So I really wasn't sure where he was going with this. And then on the throat, it looks like it was almost the symbol for air. Right, which would make sense.
It looks to me to be an alchemical symbol.
Yeah,
and there is alchemy throughout the episode.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, tons of stuff that was going on there. Really interesting. Kind of if you're into symbolism, a really neat scene.
All right, so then we fast forward a little bit in the episode. We find out that there's more to the capstone, more to the pyramid, and we find ourselves transported to 8 Franklin Square, which is, you know, similar to the book, which is interesting, which is at the Alma Shrine Center in Washington, D.C., which actually does exist. It is an actual physical location, and the Shrine Center exists there. But yet, lo and behold, There's no secret mystical energy coming from there, because lo and behold, Prison Yoda shows up, and boom, he starts to use his magic, and nothing resonates. But something else resonates as we go through the episode, because meanwhile, Moloch is taking a walk, taking a short walk off a long pier, and we see him take this this device, which he got in the last episode, and starts to plug it in and turn it on over this body of water. And what happens next, Jason?
So this gets back to somatics, which we talked about last week. It was introduced last week, and it was the ability to see sound waves and sound vibrations. And typically, some of the strongest use cases for somatics have been with water. Another strong use case is sand. But here we see Moloch testing out, different vibrational patterns. It makes, Nunez bleed from his ears. and it kills all the fish in the body of water. So very interesting. There's not much to this particular symbol that I can tell per se. Didn't really resonate with, yeah.
It looks
unintended
like,
puns.
It kind of looks like triskelions on that inner surface. That's inner part.
No, it doesn't. All right.
It looks like something else.
Yeah, all are bad. Okay, so
my son draws those in the snow.
it's a return to the obelisk from the last episode's love scene.
Yes, that one. So yeah, fast forward. We're going to skip over that and talk about how the 33rd degree, where all is revealed, may not be the 33rd degree of Freemasonry, but in fact may be an allusion to Sir Isaac Newton, right? With the Newtonian scale. And it is an actual thing where they where Isaac Newton invented basically the first thermometer, which he called, but did not call his measures, his units, temperature. So if you look it up, I mean, had to fact check this thing. But sure enough, the scale that Isaac Newton wrote down does include 34 degrees as the boiling of water, but yet 33 is when it actually starts to boil. So I thought that was a nice catch, that the 33rd degree is when water begins to boil. Not, it's not a rolling boil yet at 34 degrees, but yes, actually true. So not necessarily Masonic, not Scottish Rite 33rd degree, but they then boil the capstone and the pyramid to reveal all the cool stuff that the wax leaks out, which is similar to the book. So at least they're sticking to the MacGuffins of the book to push the story along. Although, you know, again, they're doing it a little bit differently, but the major elements are there. So I'm happy that they're kind of getting back to the core text of that.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Great.
I'm happy that you just covered my thing, so feel free to move on to the next one.
Yeah, you just covered a bunch of my stuff.
Oh, yeah. Too. Your name is Joe. That's what that one is. Joe, you want to add anything else to the new?
No, I absolutely do not want to add anything else to any of your conversation.
Jason, tell us about 8 Franklin Square.
We've already talked about it.
We didn't talk about
it. I'm sorry. You've already talked about it. Franklin Square is also known as Franklin Park. It is a park within Washington, D.C. That was purchased by the government in 1832 and turned into a park. Otherwise, it was just fallow land that had some springs. And there's a statue of Commodore John Barry in the west side of the park. He's been credited as the father of the American Navy, along with John Paul Jones and John Adams. But the reason for the interest behind Franklin Square or Franklin Park is the building that juts right up against it, which is the Almas Temple. It's at 1315 K Street Northwest, and it faces Franklin Square and houses Almas Shrine, which is the subgroup for Shriners International within Washington, D.C. And the edifice of the building is a Moorish style of architecture with elaborate multicolored terracotta in its facade. Constructed in 1929 by a member of the Almas Shrine.
Thank you, Jason, for telling us all
You're
about
welcome, John.
Almas
Thank
Shrine.
You, Jason.
So, so it is technically a Masonic building, but the Prison Yoda was unable to get the magic out of that building, right? They're all trying to find this hidden mystery. But one thing that you alluded to also earlier, Jason, is alchemy shows up in a large effect in this episode, which is super exciting, right? Because, you know, we talked a little bit about some of the tattoos on Prison Yoda. We talked about that. And now we're diving deeper. So, Jason, tell us about alchemy in general and this episode in particular.
So alchemy was a, you know, it was, most people regard alchemy as a Middle Age fascination with turning lead into gold or other precious metals. And alchemy took on a different form within the Age of the Enlightenment. And the focus, you know, was still very much on turning lead into gold, but the focus was more on purification. And that combined with Rosicrucianism and the self-improvement of Neoplatonic thought, you know, spurred this interest in purification and spiritual purification as well as material purification. And so we have an alchemical process that has emerged, and you know, there are four phases, you know, the earth, air, water, and fire phases. But then there are like upwards of, I think, seven or eight different stages of alchemy. This particular stage that we're seeing here is the distillation process. And the distillation process is a process whereby the alchemist would boil an elixir to increase the elixir's purity. It flows with, you know, not only the water phase, but also the air phase, because the impurities are boiled out and become vapor. And so in distillation, it is said to have been the final purge before enlightenment happens. And so, you know, having to, you know, put the pyramid through the distillation stage of alchemy tells the viewers that Langdon and Peter and Catherine Solomon are getting close to the end state, because the distillation is really the final stage before enlightenment and you know, apotheosis can actually occur. And so that to me was really fascinating, that they chose that particular stage of alchemy to send the message that really we're coming down to the final episode, which is where that enlightenment will actually take place.
Yeah, so it's a good setup. So thank you for walking through that. Yeah, because I mean, definitely they alluded to the incinerator as well, right, as part of fire. Right, the distillation.
The calcination stage, which is the first stage of alchemy, where you reduce everything to ash so that you can then separate it out, recombine it, distill it, and then reach that new enlightened state of matter.
Well, he turned his mom into ash, so maybe they did that at the beginning.
Ooh. We have some water, we have some fire. We have some air on her throat. Yeah, I like it.
Boom.
Boom. Illuminati confirmed. So, we then find out that...
Get out of my head, Joe.
That Prison Yoda has a name. He finally Prison has Yoda. A name.
His name is Chuck Dunning.
Also known as Benjamin York. Also known as Samyaza. So I jumped to the interwebs and found out that Samyaza was actually a fallen angel, which comes directly out of the Book of Enoch. So that's really an interesting character in some of the old Jewish tradition of some of the apocalyptic text, as well as some of the stuff that's not normally found in, I guess you would call it, the Apocrypha of Judaism, per se. But... You know, without diving deep into the Book of Enoch, Samyaza specifically, as a fallen angel, is one of probably the Nephilim, which were these large giants that were angels that were there in the early part of the creation story. And so, go ahead.
Were the Nephilim weren't the angels? The Nephilim were the offspring. Yep. They were the offspring of the angels who mated with mortal
women. That's right.
Women.
That's right.
They made the bump yeah. with earth women, and you ended up
angels and earth
they women. They made the obelisk.
Created the Nephilim. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Because what I'm getting confused with is I just recently watched the movie Noah, where the Nephilim and specifically Semyaza was portrayed as this rock, not rock lobster, rock monster.
But that, those weren't Nephilim. Those were fallen angels that they got left on Earth. Remember when they got broken open?
Right.
You know, they got forgiven and they turned into magic fire people and they went up to heaven.
But Semyaza was the name of one of those
angels.
Yes.
Angels. And the leader of angel. Yeah, Semyaza is portrayed as the leader of those watchers who who did the obelisk thing with
Obelisk thing. So I thought that was a nice touch. You know, fallen angel, you know, having the allusions to, you know, like Satan, right, as a fallen angel and being a bad esoteric guy, right? So which is why he's all tatted up, but yet now showing up and being responsible for the pursuit of Moloch. I don't know. We don't know why he's showing up all of a sudden, but it'll be a fun thing to culminate once we get to episode 10. Mm-hmm. Right. So we're Prison Yoda, I mean Semyaza, is running about, and yet we cut back to the distillation phase, which where we find this magic square. Robert, tell us about all these symbols, every single one.
No problem. A different kind of magic square. You all remember I think it was second or third episode was Melancholia, where they had Durer's Melancholia painting in which they found a magic square that they had to decipher. Traditionally, magic squares, we've talked about them in the past, but in a purely mathematical sense, it comes down to like math games, kind of like people play Sudoku or play solitaire. In this way, a magic square can be considered, you know, in a very profane sense, recreational mathematics. You take numbers 1 through 9, put them in a grid, and you try to get all rows to add to 15. So it's a little bit of a puzzle. In this sense, it's totally different because what you're dealing with is iconography. And what I felt was kind of a stretch for this particular part of the episode, which really requires some imagination because it almost feels as if instead of Robert Langdon, it's Jeff Goldblum trying to figure out how to hack the alien spaceships in ID4. he's making these wild jumps to kind of put them together in order to form a sort of pictogram in which, right, you have the solar disk at the top, or the circumpunct at the top with the pyramid and the winding stairs, right? So y'all played one of those thingies that you used to get like in your Happy Meals or whatever, where you would slide around the tiles. And it's very much in that same thing. He's putting together a photograph or a pictorial message with, you know, little square emojis, and he puts them all together and he gets this really great image that what we have on screen here. So, but then they're missing two squares. So I kind of don't know what's going on, but what you see here is this, they're saying that this area, this circled area, is the winding stairs consisting of 3, 5, and 7 steps, which adds up to 15. So that's the 15 for this magic square. But what was cool is they kind of left open those two, right? Right before the alchemical symbol for gold, AU, and then the other end. And we didn't know where they were going to find these two last pieces to figure out where the treasure is. Because up to this point, right, we didn't really talk about it, but they think they trick Moloch into going to this mosque. But you'll find out later that it's a double and he's not really Moloch. And he has followed them to the house of the temple where this magic square leads them. So then they have to find a key.
So how do they find that key, Joe?
Triskelions.
Yes.
Yes.
Everywhere.
All over the place. No. They find the Tyler sword, which I was trying to find confirmation if it's actually hidden behind the master's chair. I don't know if that was just a TV thing or a cool plot device. But that's where the Tyler sword is in this temple room. But the Tyler sword is, you know, the traditional implement that you give to a Tyler for them to stand outside the door and to protect the lodge room, you know, without getting into too much ritual. he has a job, and it's to keep off people who are not Masons from coming in. Some fun facts about the Tyler sword. The first time it shows up in anything written is not until 1738. And most people believe that since the word that you use in a lot of ritual is the word implement and not sword, there were earlier objects that were used as the Tyler's implement, like a trowel and things like that. Brother John Bizak wrote a great article on it. But he did talk about some things that other scholars have talked about where the traditional sword, going back to your angels bit, the traditional sword for the Tyler was the flaming sword or the flambeige. So it did not look like that, but reality, and unfortunately, a lot of people stopped making flaming swords or flambeiges, you know, the wavy looking swords, and I actually have one right here. So, yes.
Ooh, look at that.
So these aren't super practical for, you know, smoting your enemies and stuff like that, but they're purely decorative. But they do symbolize, going back to John's angels blurb, they symbol the flaming swords that are carried by angels that are guarding the entranceway to the Garden of Eden.
To the Garden of Eden.
Since we sucked and we all got kicked out. So that is a little tidbit about the Tyler sword, but it has more secrets, which Robert will get into shortly.
Right. So we have symbols on said sword, right? Where we find it's laced with gold and the master square. And what else do we see on it, Robert?
You know, the Ouroboros.
Aha!
So the classic imagery of the snake or the dragon eating its tail. A few of us have this ring. We have a ring. I wonder if that's an Ascended Master's ring. They just welded on there. Yeah.
I've got mine in the other room.
It's same. So the Ouroboros is a really interesting symbol, just in that it is so diverse in nature in regards to who chooses to use it and when. You know, it's not inherently a Masonic symbol. In fact, I would argue it's probably not, but as many symbols within Freemasonry, it is likely ritually appropriated to some extent. What it really symbolizes across all brands, of religious and philosophies is going to be this idea of cyclical time, rebirth, the triskelion, life, birth, life, death, or death, birth,
it in it?
Life, death, system. Rebirth, yeah.
Life, death,
so rebirth. It's a cyclical time. But also, they say that it's formless disorder that surrounds the ordinary world. And we also see it in Gnostic Christianity as related to the zodiac. So it represents the 12 signs around the world with its tail in its mouth. So in this instance, they also make some correlation to the tail being a phallic symbol and the mouth being a yonic symbol, so you can, we'll keep it family friendly and leave it at that. But it was interesting nonetheless to read some of that because I had not actually dove into that part of that symbol before. Everything that I've ever associated with it was, of course, the life cycle and the cyclical nature of time, if there is such a thing.
That's the first time I heard that reference that you just made. It kind of reminds me about Norse mythology. Isn't there a serpent around Midgard that circles the whole planet? And
that's right. Yeah.
The
world serpent.
And this is supposed to also, it could also represent, you know, tying it back to alchemy. It's an alchemical symbol for what was written. It says it can relate to alchemy, opus, or the philosopher's stone. Again, that's something that I picked up out of some text. I don't have a lot of context for it, and I won't pretend to know more than I do about it, but it was interesting to hear just to tie it back into the idea of alchemy that had, you know, turned up more than once in this particular episode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder if it's related to the circumpunct, right, as a circle with a dot in the middle, which is related to gold as an alchemical symbol, which is the ultimate state of purification, right, turning lead into gold. So maybe that's the connection there. All right. Well, that was fun. So one more episode left. Can't wait to see what happens next. So what else did you find? Let us know in the comments below. Otherwise, that's all for this week's episode. If you want to see more content on Masonic signs, symbols, and other things of Freemasonry, subscribe to this channel. That is the Masonic Roundtable, and we will see you next week.